Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of February, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, ooh, we started early. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the, but before we get to the news, I must tell you that today is National Grain-Free Day. It is also National Sticky Bun Day. So ooh, there's a little something for everybody.
Ooh.
Today.
Extra grain or no grain?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And my start all button worked without crashing.
Congratulations. I'm proud of you.
We'll see if the stop all button works at the end.
Well, if it crashes, they still stop. So yeah. Who cares? All right. For those of you whose companies use Microsoft 365 for email, or individuals who do so and have turned off the Copilot chat assistant for email, tagged as confidential for security reasons, I have some bad news for you. It seems that for at least the last few weeks, all of your private, sensitive, confidential email that you specifically told Microsoft you didn't want to let Copilot chat have access to has been accessed by Copilot chat. This includes not only emails you've sent, but also email you only drafted but didn't actually send. All of those emails have been incorporated into Copilot's large language model and uploaded to the cloud where they can be accessed by anyone using the right prompts. Copilot Chat allows paying Microsoft 365 customers to use the AI-powered chat feature in its Office software products, including Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Microsoft said the bug meant that draft and sent email messages with a confidential label applied are being incorrectly processed. Incorrectly processed by Microsoft 365 Copilot Chat. It's unclear whether this is only paying customers of Microsoft 365 or everybody who uses any Microsoft Mail product, and Microsoft ain't talking. Microsoft won't say how many customers are affected by the bug, which leads cynics like me to think it's all of them. So those of you using Microsoft for your email might want to start thinking about what you've said to anyone in email so far this year and start thinking about damage control, particularly those of you who've been talking about secret business secrets in what you assumed were confidential emails, or those of you who've been talking smack about your bosses or talking other things to coworkers that maybe you shouldn't be. At any rate, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft Office bug exposes confidential emails. And your choices are, this is no big deal. This could be a problem. This is serious. And this is why I don't use Microsoft. So far, we've got 26 votes. And not shockingly, this is why I don't use Microsoft is well in the lead, followed by this is serious. And once you vote in the poll, which is easy enough to do, you can head on over to soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and vote in the poll there. And then, of course, if you want to talk to us about that or anything else, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. This is a real problem that all of the chat, all of the large language models, the AI models have, but Microsoft seems to be particularly prone to it. Confidential information is being used to train the model, and then anybody who knows the proper way to craft the prompt can get at those confidential pieces of information. And again, it doesn't matter if you know, Dear Fred, when should we go to lunch? I mean, who cares? But if you're talking about corporate secrets, mm-hmm, you know, you're putting a new product out and you want, and you're talking in your team. A lot of Microsoft 365 users use Teams, and Microsoft Copilot talks to Teams. All of that stuff has been incorporated into their large language model, and anybody who knows how to properly craft a prompt can go get it. And of course, you know, again, if you're talking smack about your boss, or you're having an affair in the office or whatever, all of that information is there. And you know, that, I don't know, to me, that's just one of the many reasons I don't use a lot of the products that I don't use, because they're just not secure.
Well, and I'd go even farther. Nothing on the internet is secure.
Well, that's true.
There are so many leaks, passwords, you know, social security numbers, the national public data breach, leaked everybody's everything.
Yeah.
Nothing is safe. And now they're trying to make age verification safe, to prove you're of age to go to social media. Oh, we swear we won't lose this data. Well, you just lost it last week.
Yeah, exactly. But going back a little bit, though, as far as, you know, Microsoft, we have said this for decades, and that they are the biggest conglomerate out there, with the vast majority of systems being used with Microsoft. So that's why virus writers, where did they first go after? Microsoft products, because everybody was getting the latest and greatest Word version of Windows, so they were prime target. You might as well have painted a big bullseye on the back of every individual that was using Windows. No different now.
Right. The smart money says, if I'm looking to steal your corporate secrets, Microsoft is the place to hit.
Yep. Biggest bang for the buck.
Biggest bang for the buck. So, if your company, in particular, because, you know, again, nobody cares when you're having lunch with Fred, but if your company in particular uses Microsoft Mail, Microsoft Chat, Microsoft anything, you might want to sit back and think about what you've said in those emails and those chats over at least the last month and a half.
And if you may not know if what your back end your company uses.
Right.
But if you set up your email and it said Exchange or Outlook or
Hotmail,
that's Microsoft.
But I might want to know what time Fred's eating lunch, if he's buying.
Yeah, we could all show up and Fred would pay.
Yeah, hey, know? Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. Sure.
I'll bet that.
You understand what I'm saying is that once again, Microsoft has screwed up in a way that is dangerous for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but that's simply the fact.
It is
that
what
is exactly
it is.
What happened.
But recall is safe.
Yeah, recall is safe. We're going to take a snapshot of everything you do, including all your passwords, every few seconds, and store it on our obviously secure servers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And then let AI look at it to help remind you of what you were doing last
week. And then train AI on it so that anybody who knows how to craft the prompt.
That's the goal. You remember that thing I did last week with that guy? And it says yes and shows it to you.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not what you get.
Yeah.
What you have to do is you have to craft your prompt all the way down to a gnat's hair.
Yeah.
And then you get something approximating the answer you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prompt crafting is the way of the future in many ways. So, you know, the ability to extricate data from a large language model, an AI, if you must use that term, is I think a skill that we're going to be needing more and more and seeing more and more people use. This is just another egregious misstep by Microsoft. And I, you know, those of you still using Microsoft as your daily driver, God bless you. Do what you want, but you know, it's likely that your company's secrets are out there. If you're using Microsoft, at least certainly they're available to people. Whether anybody's got them yet is another story.
Whether they're worth going after.
Or even whether they're worth going after. But, you know, if I were a large corporation, if I were any corporation that had business rivals, that would be every corporation, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were a corporation that had business rivals, I would be very upset right now, knowing that everything I had said, every intellectual property item, every private email about, you know, maybe a merger or a new product or whatever. All of that is out there for anybody to find.
Yep.
I would be really angry. You know, Microsoft is sloughing it off as a bug, but it's bad programming. I'm sure it was programmed by an AI. I'm sure it was.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? You get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get. So there you have it. There you have it.
It is what it is.
Microsoft is charging you to make your data available to everybody.
And that's one of the reasons there are places. The EU has just started pushing to remove Microsoft from everywhere, moving to Linux desktops and Linux services, a custom EU Linux.
Right.
But, you know, but
China already has Red Star Linux.
Yeah, Russia's got one too.
Russia has Red Star Linux. China has, I forget what they call it.
Yeah.
The EU is now doing that. They're creating their own version of Linux to run on their own servers, back end, and et cetera, et cetera.
EU hardware. Trillions of dollars of U.S. Value is going to be lost.
Yeah.
When the rest of the country stops buying our products.
Well, right. And think about where Microsoft stands right now. They currently are the number one desktop in the world. But when Russia, China, the EU all go to Linux, you lose the leverage of Windows.
Mm-hmm.
If they're on Linux, they're not using any of the back-end Microsoft services, so those get lost. They don't need, and then look at the peripheral damage. I won't need a Microsoft antivirus program. I won't need any Microsoft utilities that work with Windows.
Yep.
All of those industries are going to find much, now they're not going to go away, but they're going to find much smaller markets.
Because Windows is so easy to hack.
Right.
Whereas Linux, if there's an issue, oh, it's fixed usually by the next day.
Right.
Usually by the person that found the issue.
Yeah, right. I mean, they go in and correct it.
That's, and that's always been the
that's the norm.
What is it? Mutually assured destruction.
Right.
That we aren't going to hack you, so you don't hack us. And if you rely on us for our products, we rely on you for your products. We have a weird situation running, you know, now where some of our biggest suppliers are becoming our biggest enemies.
Right. The symbiosis that used to exist doesn't anymore, or at least won't in the very near future. So I would, you know, if I were a person who had massive amounts of Linux stock, I would be thinking very carefully right now.
Okay, Don, where are you calling from?
I don't see it as I don't see where this ends up being good for Microsoft.
So Red Hat is American, but Canonical is British.
Canonical is British. Most of the Linux companies are not really companies, frankly. But when you get the entire EU, for example, or China or Russia saying we're going to create our own version of Linux, they make the money and the resources available. And so all of the things that you expect from a large company in the United States will be available to the Linux developers in these other countries.
Yep. What I find especially ironic is that we in the U.S. has been banning certain products from China because we're afraid they're spying on us. That's exactly what the EU is doing. They're going to stop using Microsoft and Symantec because they're afraid the government has told them to spy on us.
Yep.
Well, but then the reality is they don't need to spy on us because the mistakes spy on them for us.
Well, exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Don, all the way from Perrington, North Carolina. What's up, Don?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. And I have just purchased a new laptop computer with Windows 11 on it. And I have a question concerning virus protection. I understand that the Windows program comes with a virus program called Defender. Is that correct?
That is correct. Microsoft Defender.
Is that program adequate, or should one, in addition, put on a program such as AVG or Avast?
You only need one antivirus program, and Defender is not a bad one.
Adequate. That's a good description.
It is adequate. It is adequate. And it depends. Okay, so it used to be that Defender was kind of a joke, but Microsoft has truly beefed it up. And in the last couple of rounds of testing that many companies do, Defender came off very, very well. The problem is it's an antivirus program. In addition, you want an anti-malware program like Malwarebytes.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
okay, go ahead.
Putting on another program, and in this case, I put on the free version of Avast, and it seems like then that program has taken over and is in operation rather than Defender. Is that correct?
Maybe.
Usually, when you're putting a new one on, it takes off the old one or turns off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they can fight each other. One will see the other's definition list and think that those are viruses.
Right.
Which program would you recommend to put Avast or AVG on and not use Defender?
Six of one, half dozen of the other. All three of them are good. So whichever one you decide you want, good for you. But again, you also want an anti-malware program like Malwarebytes or Super Anti-Spyware or both.
Because they look at different parts of the system.
Right.
And the bottom line sort of comes down to behavior. Don't download things you didn't go looking for. If a message pops up and says you need this, it's lying. So, you know, behavior. But there are drive-by downloads and the malicious ads. So you need to have protection on the computer.
So so if you head on over to securitytango.com,
yes,
you will see under Windows software, there's the antivirus section and the anti-malware section. You've already got antivirus, so you don't need to worry about that. But under anti-malware, you can look at both Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware, and we recommend that you run both.
Okay, and those do not conflict with and operate in addition to the antivirus program?
Correct.
Be it Defender or AVG or whatever?
Correct.
Correct.
Because they do different things. They're looking for different types of generic malware, not specifically viruses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much for the information. You've very well answered my questions.
There you go. Have fun.
Thank you.
And, of course, your job now is to make sure that every single human being in North Carolina listens to this show.
I'll start on that next week.
So next week. Okay. Well, you take the weekend off. Start Monday. Okay. That's fair. Thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
I've sort of been giving the nod to Windows Defender. From Microsoft, they know how to hook into their own kernel. Trying to add something third party to the kernel, that sometimes can lead to problems. But you know, they're all pretty good.
Yeah, I have to be honest. When I first started looking at Windows Defender, like I said, I was not impressed. But over time, it has gotten better and better. I'm pretty impressed, and the reality is that it does update every 4 to 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that was Dave's big complaint early on: is it updates once a month with all the rest of the Windows stuff?
Yeah, it was very lacking, but now they have improved that.
Right, and so I'm very pleased about that. So yeah, it's much better. All right, we had talked to Don. Now we're going to talk to Ron from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Ron?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I got an email from Steve's company a couple weeks ago about a network storage device, a NAS, that said it was going to replace Time Capsule. And I'm wondering if he can speak to that a little bit, if it's okay. And my big question is, I live in the Mac world. My wife lives in the PC world. Would we both be able to use this device?
Yeah, so the big issue in the Mac world is Apple's Time Capsule, which is an all-in-one device, and no one makes an identical one now. It's a Wi-Fi router, it's an Ethernet switch, it's a print server, and it's a network storage server. And so you use it to set your network backup. It's especially useful if you have laptops, because you don't have to remember to plug a hard drive into your laptop in order to keep the backup running. We hear so many times people have forgotten to plug their drive in for 6 weeks, and then they lose their data. So with a network backup, it can back up over Wi-Fi wherever you happen to be. A lot of people have already replaced the Wi-Fi half of it because the airport is old. They just abandoned it like 5 years ago.
Right.
And it's only Wi-Fi 5, and now we're on Wi-Fi 7. So a lot of people have already replaced that. We like the Eero routers to replace the Wi-Fi half of it. But then the network hard drive version, we've been using the Buffalo drive. Synology is another big name in network attached storage, or NAS. They are infinitely customizable. So if you like to tinker with Unix, Synology is okay. But the Buffalo drive is set up plug and play. And it works with any platform. It uses SMB, which is the problem that the Apple Time Capsule uses SMB version 1, which has been deprecated. Version 2 has been deprecated. We're on version 3 now. But coming next year, this year now, in macOS 27, they're going to remove SMB version 1. In macOS 26 and earlier, you can still run SMB version 1. So with macOS 27, the Time Capsule is going to stop working as a backup drive. So that's why we put those notes out for everyone who still has an old Time Capsule. If you upgrade to OS 27, your Time Capsule is going to stop working as a network backup drive. And the Buffalo drives are relatively inexpensive in order to back up. We generally recommend if you've got one computer, one or two computers, the 2 terabyte model. If you got 3 or 4 computers, maybe the 4 terabyte model. You sort of add up how much the total storage of all your drives are, and that tells you how big a drive you need in your backup.
Gotcha. Yeah, so we have 2 notebooks, so I think the 2 terabyte would be fine.
As long as you have less than or equal to 1 terabyte per machine, you're fine.
We do.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think we're each at a half, so that'll work out fine.
Yeah.
Can I ask a non-related computer question to Steve?
Sure.
What model Rocket Club do you belong to?
Well, at the moment, none of them, because we haven't renewed yet. It's a new year. I usually go to Mars, the Monroe Astronomical Rocket Society, who they launch out of the Geneseo Airport at the National Warplane Museum. I've also gone to the Upstate Research Rocketry Group, ERG, and they fly out of Potter, which is between Canandaigua and Panyan. In fact, their Muckfest is coming up in a couple of weeks. Because they launch on a
muddy field,
thank you,
a farm field,
a big farm field, yeah. I've launched it both. So this year the national sport launch, run by National Association of Rocketry, is being held in Geneseo in May. Mother's Day weekend is interesting. And then the last year, the Large Dangerous Rocket Ships, which is the Tripoli's national show, was at Potter. So I flew at Potter. I shredded my Big Red Max, and I don't know why. I was filming at launch. Oh, that's good. And then as soon as I stopped filming, it shredded. something happened in the injection. It might have been the E-motor Kato, and multiple fins came down separately. Yeah, so between the two clubs, they usually don't launch on the same weekend, but sometimes they do.
I'm closer to Potter, so that's what I'm thinking about, leaning that way.
Yep, and it's with the Rockets. Generally, they fly once a month, because that's the FAA waivers they have. If you only launch low power and keep below 400 feet, you don't need an FAA waiver. But at Geneseo, they got an 8,000 foot, and I think at Potter they have a 10,000 foot waiver. Because Potter's more in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. I love their sign. It's a missile when you drive by.
Yeah, yeah. And was it Route 334, I think it is? They have a big big missile out there, yeah. Yeah, they launched a full-scale Patriot missile there at LDRS last year.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate all your knowledge. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Ron. You too. Have fun. All right. We are going to take a quick break. But don't go too far, because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you, but only if you give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Ed from Ithaca, New York on the line. What's up, Ed?
Hello, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I just have a question. Oh, actually, it's afternoon. Question. Batteries. So with a laptop, if I keep it plugged in all the time, is that better for the battery than taking it out and recharging it when it gets closer to 20% or 40%, rather?
No. It's better to let the battery do its job. Generally speaking, for most batteries, it's certainly less of a problem than it used to be, but even with the new battery technology, it is better to not have it plugged in all the time. Because basically, and again, we don't want to anthropomorphize these things because...
they hate that.
Exactly right. But they get used to being plugged in. And they get lazy, and they stop being good batteries. You can generally re-energize them by doing several cycles of drain it all the way down, charge it all the way up, drain it all the way down. But it's better to you know, let it get down to about 20%, charge it to about 80%, let it get down to 20%, charge it to 80%.
Some of the bigger brands, I'm pretty sure Lenovo does it, will recognize you leave it plugged in all the time and say, oh, you leave it plugged in all the time. I'm going to drop to 80% and hold the charge there. Because you don't want to keep the battery fully charged all the time, because that's bad for it. You don't want to discharge it completely, because that's bad for it.
I've currently got a Lenovo laptop in that I'm refurbishing for somebody. And it apparently ignores the power until it needs to charge. Mm-hmm. So I leave it plugged in all the time, and it just says, yeah, I don't care. It's got two batteries in it. One's at 51% today. The other one was at 75%. And they'll just discharge till they get down to the point where the computer basically decides, okay, I guess I'll charge up again.
It learns your habits.
Yeah.
And so if you plug it in overnight to charge, and then you leave it, you use it in the morning and don't use it on battery until like in the afternoon, then it knows not to fully charge it until just before.
But that's new. That's new ones, and it depends on your system, and it depends on what circuitry is in that machine. So you know, you can only know that by observing what the thing actually does.
Or find it in the manual,
yeah, over time. But generally speaking, if you want to get the best life and performance out of your battery, don't let it discharge lower than 20%. Don't charge it regularly above 80%. And let it cycle between those two regularly.
Okay, great. And that's for batteries on phones as well as computers.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, batteries on phones, too.
Batteries on phones the same.
All the batteries these days are lithium ion. Some are lithium polymer. We're waiting for the next new solid capacitance batteries that will have a much higher capacity and won't run into the danger of the thermal runaway. When lithium ion batteries get old, they can start swelling as the liquid capacitance boils off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually, your battery's usually under your trackpad. And so sometimes we'll see the trackpad getting pushed up from the bottom and it won't click anymore.
Right.
Yeah, but generally speaking, Ed, let the battery do its job regularly.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, thanks.
Thanks so much for your help.
Yep, bye-bye. Bye.
And a lot of the brand companies have their own tips for battery health on their websites. So that's one of the benefits of getting a brand name computer.
Right. The problem with this Lenovo is, what if I want to charge it up to take somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to do it.
It learned your habit and it doesn't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
There's probably a button somewhere to force it to charge.
Probably somewhere. But yeah. All right. Well, you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415. I will read the Google News. Google has released emergency updates to fix a high-severity Chrome vulnerability exploited in zero-day attacks, marking the first such security flaw patch since the start of the year. Successful exploitation can allow attackers to trigger browser crashes, rendering issues, data corruption, and other undefined behavior. Google has now fixed this vulnerability for users in the stable desktop channel, with new versions rolling out to Windows, Mac OS, and Linux users worldwide over the coming days or weeks. So when you get that notice, update. According to the latest release notes for Google Play services, Android phones will be getting new local file backup feature powered by Google Drive. Local file backup sounds like a straightforward backup feature that works in the background for your Android device's download folder, your downloaded documents. It's what the Google Drive for desktop app does on Mac and Windows. To be clear, it's different from Android's existing backup that uses your Google Drive storage for apps and app data, call history, contacts, device settings, and SMS and MMS messages. This capability is a good idea given how people often download documents to their primary computing device without uploading them anywhere else. As such, they only ever have one copy of important PDFs. It's on your phone and nowhere else. Following text, audio, interviews, images, and video, the Gemini app's latest output is music. With Lyria 3. Lyria 3 is Google DeepMind's most advanced music generation model. You no longer have to add your own lyrics, as Google automatically generates them based on your prompt. The model now offers control over style, vocals, tempo, and other elements, while offering the ability to create more realistic and musically complex tracks. This model and feature are designed for original expression, not for mimicking existing artists. Google says it has been very mindful of copyright and partner agreements during training. So if you specify an artist in the prompt, Gemini will take this as a broad creative inspiration and create a track that shares a similar style or mood. There are also filters in place to check outputs against existing content. It'll show up under the Tools menu. Three engineers from Silicon Valley have been arrested and charged with stealing trade secrets from Google and other technology companies, as announced by federal prosecutors. The individuals were taken into custody on Thursday in San Jose, California, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. The three individuals have been indicted by a federal grand jury on multiple charges, including conspiracy to commit trade secret theft, and attempted theft of trade secrets, as well as obstruction of justice. It's official. Google I.O. 2026 will take place from May 19th to 20th. In an announcement on Tuesday, Google says it will share the latest AI breakthroughs and updates and products across the company line from Gemini to Android and more during the event, which will take place in person in Mountain View, California's Shoreline Amphitheater and online. This year is shaping up to be another AI-heavy event as the company continues to expand on Gemini, along with AI features across its search engine, Chrome, workspace apps, and Pixel devices. We're not AI, as far as you know, so give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
I just saw a YouTube video with Thomas Dolby, and they asked him what he thinks of AI-generated music. And he says using it as a tool is great, but, you know, don't make up whole new things.
Make up whole new things.
Or claim to be somebody else's, you know. And it always reminds me of the Mitchell and Webb episode where Bronze Orientation Day comes along and the Flint chippers are going to be out of the business because we're going to use bronze arrowheads now.
Yep.
Every new technology disrupts the existing technologies.
Yep. The buggy whip manufacturers.
Yep.
The buggy manufacturers.
Yeah. Unless you turned into a custom coach design.
Right.
So you stick an engine on the front of your buggy.
I can't remember the name of the company. It's somebody and somebody. From Rochester, New York, used to be the biggest buggy maker in the country. I can't think of the name. They made many of the Wells Fargo wagons that were used to transport mail and stuff. And they the Surrey with the fringe on top is that model. I can't think of the name. Somebody will call in and tell me.
The Antique Rochester Carriage Company?
No. It's somebody and somebody. It'll come to me. In the meantime, we'll talk to Bob, calling all the way from New Mexico. My goodness, aren't we coast to coast this week? What's up, Bob?
Hi, I want to thank that last caller about the laptop and plugging it in or not. I had the same question, but that's not why I'm calling. My question is on usernames for accounts. Last week, it was afternoon, we were watching the Olympics, and my wife gets a ding on her cell phone that she got an email. She reads the email that one of her accounts is now locked out because somebody tried to access it too many times and failed to do so. So I've listened to your show enough not to use the same passwords on any account and make them long and hard and using a password manager. But my question is, you know, it took a half hour to straighten it out. No harm, no foul. We were able to just regenerate the account. But somebody can just go in and use your username, which for the most purposes has to be your email address.
Right.
And email addresses are pretty much public.
Yeah, and then you put in the password, and whether it's they allow 3 times, 5 times, 10 times, or whatever, they can create real havoc. You know,
yeah. It may not have been someone intentionally attacking that account. It may have just been someone misspelled it.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly a possibility, but Ed, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of problems with any system's current setup for authentication, and you've hit on one of the big ones, and there's no fix that you can really so there are a couple of things you can do. Any system that lets you use a pass key, you should use one. So for example, on a lot of my systems, in order to log in, I go to my phone and it says, "Is this you?" And I say yes. Those generally don't have a limit on the number of times you can ask. Because what happens is the fake people recognize that it's asking for a passkey and they know they can't get past it. So they stop immediately and go and move on. But anybody that requires an actual password, it's a real problem, and there's no solution that you can implement. If they allow you to use a passkey, you should use one, or an authenticator, like Google Authenticator or Facebook or Microsoft's Authenticator app. And they do the same thing. It'll say, okay, you want to log in, go to your Authenticator app and type in the number you get.
Yeah, the other option is use a different email address for every account.
Right. Even so, they can guess or mistype that email address.
Right.
Okay, my first reaction was, well, I'll just create unique and hard usernames. And out of maybe 40 accounts, only 3 would allow me to change the username instead of just the email address.
Yeah,
because companies want your email address so they can advertise to you.
Well, it's two things. It's that, certainly, but it's also the fact that every email address is unique. so they don't have to write any code that says, has somebody else used this username? They know that any username you put in is going to be unique. So it's easier for the programmers.
Okay. Well, you kind of answered my question. There's nothing more that I can really do and just live with it. But it's like the first time this has happened in, you know, a decade.
Right. It is less prevalent than some other attempts to, you know, if you get an email message that says somebody tried to log in your account, click here, never do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they tell you, well, you're locked out, you have to go do something for real on the actual website, not click in the email, then that's generally speaking real and you should be okay.
Okay. Well, there you go.
All right. Now, Ed, Bob, your job, like Don's in North Carolina, your job is to get every single human being in New Mexico listening to our show.
All 2.1 million of us?
All 2.1 million of you. You can start small with, say, a million.
And the bigger, okay. And the bigger question, just so we can be jealous?
No.
I want to know his temperature.
You son of a pup.
Thank you. What's the temperature there?
It's 44, but you have to realize it's still morning here. The sun is up. It's strong. Yep. And it'll be in the 50s today and mid-70s by middle of the week.
Yeah, see, it's slowly. It's coming our way. It's slowly coming.
Slowly is the operative word there.
Well, hey, at our age?
Well, that's right. We'll take slow. All right, thanks, Bob, and everybody else in New Mexico who will be listening by next week. All million.
Yes, thank
just a million. That's all we're asking for.
Yeah, we'll
first week.
Yes, thank you, too, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye. Yeah. This is why we're saying authenticator apps, pass keys, but authenticator apps are the best,
mm-hmm.
are the best way to go for logging into a system. And more systems are making them available.
Yep.
If you've ever gone through the pain of having, say, your Facebook identity stolen.
Been there, done that.
Right. Yep. The easiest way out of that is just make a new one. But if you can use...
What a pain in the arse.
And one of the scams on Facebook is, hi, this is Steve. I had to make a new address. Friend me again.
Yeah right. But generally speaking, if you can add an authenticator to any login system, you are in much better shape than if you are just using a username and password.
Mm-hmm.
Because an authenticator makes it much, much more difficult. Not impossible. Don't tell anybody I said impossible. But more difficult for bad guys to get your account information.
Well, both, because I belong to both MyChart and MyCare, you know,
right.
Two different health systems. They both require now that, you know, you sign in with the username and password, and then they email you the code that you've got to put in.
Right.
To get in and see your medical records, yeah, which is great.
I've started seeing a lot of companies doing that. They don't bother with a password that they're going to lose anyway.
Right.
They just send you an email loop.
Yeah, and then you got to put in that cut and paste that code number into the screen
now,
and verify.
Email and text messaging are not as secure as an authenticator app, so if you have the choice of that, take it.
Yep.
But second best would be text or email.
Whatever you can do to improve the... chances of you getting hacked, take that extra step. You know, don't say, oh, I don't want to be bothered with it and this and that. And yeah, no.
Do of course, it. Then there's the scam of people saying, okay, we're going to send you a text message with a code in it. Read us back that code.
Yeah.
As they're breaking into your account right now because they had your password.
Because they had your password and now they're getting the code that you sent in. So don't do that. If you get a random code, or you get a random. Every once in a while, I get an email from Facebook calling me a different name, saying someone is trying to get into your account. Somebody's trying to get into somebody's account, but it's not me and it's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
and there's nowhere I can go to say, this isn't me, fix this.
Yeah. But, so their ID is Nick G, not Nick F, and someone typoed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you will get a lot of these. A lot of them are, as Steve said, just fumble-fingered. Not bad intentions, just fumble fingering.
Yeah, fat fingers happen.
Right. I mean. And that's fine. Just, you can ignore all those. But in general, if you get that sort of message and you weren't trying to log into something, ignore it. Throw it away. It's either a mistake or it's somebody trying to break into you. In neither case do you want to respond.
No, just. Or if it tries to take over your machine, shut your machine off.
Right.
Turn it back on, and right. It'll go away.
Right.
And now, one other thing, though, I want to caution folks. When, if you're using, say, Chrome or that type of stuff, and you get that screen that all of a sudden says, a blue flashing screen says, your system has been infected. Do not touch anything. Do not turn it off or that. Go over, unplug it.
Well, that doesn't work on a laptop. We had a customer come in. Yeah, I unplugged it and nothing happened.
But you just restart it. And when it comes back up, when you go back into Windows and the browser, it's going to say restore previous session. Say no.
Right. Yeah,
all those say messages are always lying to you.
Yeah. Say no to that. You can then go over into the upper right-hand corner, check settings and history. And it'll show you the number of tabs. Say you had 6 tabs open before that 7th one opened up and gave you the junk. You can then go over to history and say, yeah, open up these 6 tabs that I know of, not what I was dealing with before.
Right, over the last one was, don't open it.
Yeah, exactly. That will stop that tab that's infectious opening up again.
Right. Also,
side print.
If you really want separate usernames for your accounts, if you are using Google, you can use plus addressing. So let's say your name was bob@gmail.com and you go to your bank. You could set the email address as bob+bank@gmail.com and it will come to you at bob@gmail.com, but it will come from bob+bank. Which means you can also filter on it, and you can also see who sold your address.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a Gmail address, you essentially have an infinite number of email addresses using that plus addressing.
Yeah, you'll just know where it's coming from.
Right. Also let you know who sold your address when you get unsolicited mail from that or to that address.
Right.
Yep.
So that's a nice feature of Gmail. There are a couple of others that do it as well.
Most of the email services offer some sort of aliasing, it's called. It's an alias address that points to your real account. And when you start getting too much spam, you delete that address. See, that's the problem. Using your main email address is that you start getting too much spam. The only way to stop it is get a new email address.
Right.
And that's a horrible pain to tell everyone your new address.
I have several throwaway addresses.
Yeah.
Gmail addresses are free.
Yep. You want to sign up to see the latest clothing catalog. Don't use your main address. Use a throwaway address.
Create a throwaway address. You can always go look at it or not look at it as you choose. If you are using Thunderbird, for example, as your email client, you can add multiple accounts to Thunderbird. I have, I think, 7 right now. Right now. And so you can very easily separate out the important stuff from the this will be nice, but I don't really care about it stuff.
Well, and another advantage of the Gmail account is you with each one, you get an additional 15 gigs of free storage.
Right.
So with an account, not a plus address.
Right. Not with the plus address.
No. So, like, I wanted another, backup for my Money Dance. So I thought, wait a minute, I got this other email address that I through Google. So I went over there, set up the information in that. Now I have my Money Dance going to 3 different backups off-site in
the
cloud.
Good for you. That's the way to do it. There are, by the way, programs, and I haven't used any, so I can't recommend any, but there are programs that will aggregate all of your Gmail addresses so that all each of those 15 gigs looks like one drive. Not one drive, but yeah. one single drive.
One, yeah.
And so you can, you know, use it as if it were a single drive.
Yeah, see, I just do it as each one I set up. Because within Windows, you can set up... Yep, we're coming up. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I get gabbing.
Yeah, you were gabbing. We can talk about this more when we come back. But right now, that music finally tells us that the first hour of this show is... Dave was off in his own world, which is pretty normal for Dave. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be, well, actually, the first hour of the show is over, so it's going to be a slightly longer break. But don't go too far, because we're going to come back, assuming Dave can figure out which button to push, for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of me, Nick Francesco, and another hour of you. But only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Take a bio break, grab yourself a snack and a beverage, but come on back for a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Before we go to the news, I should tell you that we looked it up, and the carriage company was Cunningham Brothers, the Cunningham Carriage Factory here in Rochester, New York. They made the hearse that took the Clantons and the McLowrys to Boot Hill after the shootout at the OK Corral.
Yeah, that's what I thought they were. Did Hearst.
Yeah.
The solid glass and everything else, the glass side panels. And the,
yeah. That one was silver chased and gold leaf. And
yeah.
Apparently they remodeled the building in 2014.
Yeah, it turned it into apartments. It was near the landfill, and they fixed all that up and turned it into apartments. Anyway, here's the Apple news. On Monday, Apple announced a transformative update coming to Apple Podcasts this spring that will bring advanced video podcast capabilities to the app. The announcement, as is usual with Apple, was full of hyperbole that obfuscates the actual details, but it seems there will be enhanced video, better monetization for creators by inserting video ads, and lots of dissemination platforms. So expect more ads in your Apple Podcast. Yippee! macOS Tahoe, which is macOS 26, will be the last version of macOS that supports Intel-based Macs, with Apple planning to phase out Intel Macs entirely following its transition to Apple Silicon. Also, Rosetta 2 support for apps will end after macOS 27. Starting with macOS Tahoe 26.4, when users launch an app that uses Rosetta 2, there will be a pop-up letting them know that the app will no longer work when support for Rosetta 2 ends. macOS 27 will launch in September of 2026, so the end of support for Intel Macs is approaching. So start sharpening those Linux skills.
And Rosetta 2 is the software that lets Intel software run on Apple Silicon.
Right.
So I know a lot of people that aren't going to be upgrading.
Yeah, exactly. Apple is starting to test end-to-end encryption, RCS messages with the developer. With the developer beta of iOS 26.4 released on Monday, Apple announced plans last year to support the feature, and once fully available, it will let iPhone and Android users send encrypted RCS messages to each other across platforms. However, with this initial implementation, Apple is only testing RCS encryption between Apple devices. It's not yet testable with other platforms, Apple says. There's really only one other platform. The company also doesn't plan to ship end-to-end encrypted RCS messages with iOS 26.4. The feature will actually ship publicly in a future update, Apple says. For those of you on Android devices, you've been able to send encrypted messages back and forth for a long time now.
And Android to Android and Google to Google, or Apple to Apple have been encrypted,
right.
But crossing platforms has not.
Right.
And hopefully this now will be.
At Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference in 2024, they announced that Siri would soon be powered by AI, ending the "I found this on the web" nonsense. However, there's a new report highlighting a problem for Apple and Siri enthusiasts. This issue for Apple comes down to one word: reliability. The overhauled Siri is hitting new snags in internal testing. The issue is reportedly forcing a rethink in Apple's C-suite. Apple bet the farm on the upgrade, so they're scrambling. The AI-powered Siri was supposed to debut in OS 26.4, but will be pushed back until at least May's iOS 26.5, if not iOS 27. And this is particularly unsettling for Apple stockholders, who saw the stock drop 5% on the news.
It was supposed to be introduced in OS 15.
Right. Now, Apple's financial situation is strong, but any stock drop makes investors unhappy. Apple has announced an event for March 4th, which is, in usual Apple fashion, has been branded a special Apple experience in this very special blossom. Also, in usual Apple fashion, it has not come out and said what it's going to actually be announcing. While we don't report on rumors here at Soundbites, we're pretty sure it's safe to say they'll announce new iPhones and iPads with upgraded hardware and probably an upgraded MacBook Pro. So get ready to be dissatisfied with all the stuff you bought just last year. But we hope you won't be dissatisfied when you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. So, yeah. Again, you know, I don't like discussing rumors, particularly since most of the big companies now put out multiple conflicting rumors in order to catch who's putting out rumors.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times all the rumors are true about what product is under development
but may not make it to market.
You're right, what's going to get shipped.
Well, and
right.
Yeah, it's a good way for them to also judge how much interest.
Right, right. Run it up the flagpole, see who salutes. Exactly, yeah. Right. So we don't like to talk about rumors, but it should be pretty obvious to anybody who's breathing that they will upgrade at least some hardware and a bunch of software at the next event.
Still waiting for that little bit thicker phone with the bigger battery.
Yeah, that ain't happening. They're all about thin. If they could get rid of everything except the screen, they would be happy.
Put a big GD case around it to protect it so it doesn't break.
Yeah, but that's on you. They made a thin phone.
They already have most of the circuitry contained under the camera.
Right.
So
yeah.
The whole rest of the phone is battery.
Right.
And actually, that's sort of the rumors on the iPhone Air being so thin. You put two Airs together, and now you got a fold.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But you could also have two batteries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the folding phones, and particularly both the folds and the tri-folds, and I guess the flips.
Yeah.
Right, which are really just a fold in the other direction, are experiencing issues. They have hinges. Hinges get dirt and lint and stuff in them.
And weak with opening and closing. Mm-hmm.
And get weaker with opening and closing them regularly. So that's why a lot of the foldable phones have a third screen on the outside. I suppose a second screen on the outside, so that you don't have to open it most of the time.
Yeah, I saw Jerry Rig Everything test Samsung's trifold, and he pours dirt on it and then opens and closes it a couple. Dirt got in there and it's starting to crack now. But he was especially surprised on how easy it was to break if you folded it the wrong way.
Yes,
I would have thought it would have broken really easy if you fold it the wrong way.
Yeah.
The problem is, have you ever tried refolding a map?
Yeah.
Someone will refold it the wrong way. Someone will.
Yeah.
You don't, that's not a maybe, that's a definite.
And especially on the trifold, you have to do one side before the other side.
Right, so that the camera's on the outside.
And because the one hinge is a little bigger to make room for the
right
other screen inside. Right. So if you put the wrong one down first, that'll break it.
That'll break.
You know, that's
when you try to fold the other one over it.
Yeah.
No, that statement that you just said is true about a lot of things. Especially when you take a product out of a box and it's got all that cardboard around it, and that trying to get it back into that box so it properly closes.
Oh, no, that'll never happen. It can't be done.
It cannot be done. Some of the boxes even have a diagram of where all of the styrofoam goes.
Matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're not going to do it. And in terms of making something foolproof, I have always believed that no matter how foolproof you make something, God will make a better fool.
Yeah. Well, I get that challenge every day at work.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
That people are bringing stuff back. And they go, I can't get this thing back in the dang box. So I had to sit there. I found a good trick, though. You just go grab one that's already in the box and carefully pull it out.
And see how it's in there. Yeah, that helps. That helps.
And some of them I've had to do that, and it's like, oh, okay.
Back when I bought my brother printer, they had an issue with some motherboards. I got three bad ones in a row, which I then had to repackage up. The fourth one was perfect and is still running to this day. It wasn't, you know, it was a manufacturing error, and they corrected it for free. They sent me four printers. By the time I repackaged the third one, I was a master at it.
You could go work at the plant and do packaging.
I could do it with my eyes closed.
People tell that to me when I'm packing their computer back up and well, you did that really. Yeah, I've done 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Right. When you brought it to me, this piece of foam was backwards, and this one's supposed to go on top, not the bottom. And
right. But, yeah, so these foldable phones, everybody wants one. Well, no.
No.
Everybody wants to make one because they think everybody wants one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the new hotness. It's the new gimmick. It's the, you know, this. It's the year's hemline. Well,
it's an interesting concept. I have a small phone in my pocket when I need it, but when I want, I can open it up and have a big tablet.
Right.
But you know, I've got an 11-inch tablet. It's not. You fold that down, and it's still really big.
It's still really big. Well,
so now it's the 8-inch tablets.
Right. If you've got a pro phone,
yeah,
with a 3.5-inch screen, you fold that out three times. It's a 10-inch screen.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. So width across. So
I want the rolling screen like Andromeda.
Just where you pull it out and there's a screen.
What was cool, that was also their hand weapon.
Yeah.
The energy to display the screen, you could shoot as an energy bolt. And
yep. But the problem is, the how big a battery can that thing have?
Yeah.
And how do you even power a weapon once with... Okay, I get it. There were two magic things in Star Trek. There was the fact that tiny little things had massive amounts of power and no wires anywhere. We've solved the no wires part.
Mm-hmm.
We have not yet solved the tiny little devices with giant amounts of energy.
Yeah.
I saw an interview with Neil Tyson and Chuck Nice is his partner. Chuck Liu is their Star Trek geek, who's also an astrophysicist. And they asked him, what percent of the Star Trek technology we've seen do you think we'll ever get? And Charles Liu said, oh, probably about 1%. And Chuck Nice said, really? Only 1%? But then Chuck Liu said, all the stuff there is, 1% of it's going to be an awful lot.
Yeah.
Oh, and that goes back to the flip phones. We had flip phones because of Star Trek.
Exactly right.
The data cartridges they used are flash drives now.
Yep. They had tablets.
Yeah, we've gone so far beyond what Star Trek originally showed, our SD cards and micro SD cards are so much more storage, and so physically smaller than the cards they had. The pads they had was a giant book with a screen on it. Now we have little tiny thin tablets.
Hello, go back a little farther. Dick Tracy's wristwatch.
Yeah, wristwatch, yeah.
Hello, that was way back in the 50s.
Right. I called my wife on my watch this morning.
Yeah.
Okay. I can do that now. It isn't exactly the two-way wrist TV.
No,
but it was a two-way wrist radio.
That's
a two-way wrist
mainly
phone.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I can do FaceTime calls on my...
Well, this wasn't... My wife doesn't do FaceTime.
But there's no camera in the watch.
Right.
So you would only... So, all right, so now they'll have to add a camera to the watch.
Very well happen. Yeah. I mean, the way they're doing cameras and, you know... making it so small, but yet the detail is so great in these phones nowadays. Doing it in a watch,
and how tiny the microphones are in these things, and how clear you are when you're talking. That all makes sense to me. It's gonna all happen. But
heck, most of the cameras in the phones now take far better pictures than you did back in the even 60s and 70s with your Kodak cameras and the Polaroids and everything else.
The only reason I've got a traditional digital camera is it's got a 16x zoom on it. But the new phones have a 15x optical zoom on it. So
And if you don't like that, there are extensions you can buy to put on them.
Yeah.
I have a macro extension. So I can look at really tiny little things with my phone camera I want to.
Well, one thing at our store that's become a thing, and people are a little shocked, is like, say, if you come in to rent a truck or all that, now with your phone, you've got to go up to one of our screens, take a picture of this Q code, and sign up, and you got to do a selfie and everything else to take pictures for insurance purposes.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like... But I'm giving out information. Well, yeah, they're giving you a truck.
You're right.
So you want a truck, you got to...
There comes a point where you have to... Well, how many... It used to be you'd give somebody your credit, your driver's license, and they would photocopy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't have a problem with that.
Because we didn't realize the security implications yet.
Exactly right.
Dumpster diving. A lot of... We're talking about leaking company secrets. It used to be dumpster diving. You go out
with the credit card runner.
The literal dumpster behind the building. You could get all the credit card carbon slips with all the numbers on it. You could find engineering plans that have been thrown away.
What a lot of people don't realize is that many particularly larger photocopiers and printers have hard drives in them.
Yep.
And when you sell or throw away that printer or copier, if you don't erase the hard drive, the last X documents, and it could be dozens if not hundreds, are still on that hard drive.
There was an episode of one of the investigative TV shows where they found the Buffalo Police Department a sex crimes unit copier.
Yeah.
With all of the suspects' data listed. And so they call them up. Did you realize there was a hard drive? No one realizes there's a hard drive in their copier.
That's exactly
especially the big industrial copiers. How can it do 100 copies a minute of your giant sheet unless it has a place to store that data before it prints it?
Now, again, it is possible, it's likely that your home printer copier 2-in-1, 3-in-1, whatever you have, does not have a hard drive in it, so don't get excited.
I just remember adding hard drives to old HPs to make it a little faster.
Well, there they rely on the memory within the computer.
Exactly. Yeah.
They create a buffer that you'll see down in the lower right-hand corner, the icon of the printer, it's queued up. And printing, say, if you had a 15-page report or that, it'll... Boom, go back to the screen because put it into a buffer and it's feeding that information constantly to through the USB port to the printer.
It used to be back when computers were old and slow, you wanted to offload that as quickly as possible so you could go back to doing what you wanted to do. Now it can happen in the background, you don't even notice it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your home printer likely does not have any sort of hard drive in it. Your home copier likely doesn't have any sort of home hard drive in it. But businesses, absolutely. So if you have a hard drive in your computer, in your printer, if you have a printer or a copier at work and you're looking to get rid of it, open it up and take out the hard drive before you do that.
They found the same thing with ATMs.
Yes.
There's an ATM receipt inside the ATM of everything you do. And a lot of ATMs go out of commission and get sold off. I forget what story it was, probably John Stossel and his investigative reports. They even found some of the used ATMs they bought still had a few $100 in them.
Yes, they do, often.
The bank didn't even bother clearing out the money before they got rid of it?
It's a rounding error.
And the ATMs are running Windows XP.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, be aware that there are a billion ways that your information can get out there. You know, I am very careful nowadays. I don't pay for anything if I can't pay with my watch or my phone. Mm-hmm. And that helps because those are one-time codes and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, there are still places that only take credit cards. And you have to hand your credit card to the lowest paid employee in the building.
Well, that's why my place, I always try to encourage people because we got the tap.
Right.
Tap to pay. I say, do that. It's far more secure. And a lot of folks, matter of fact, people get confused. They'll use the tap, say, on their phone, especially with the Apple Pay. So if they do a return, they can't just put their credit card there. They got to pull out their phone and do the return with that because it's got that code in there.
Right. I stopped for breakfast this morning because I was running a little late. And who am I kidding? I stop for breakfast every Saturday morning. It's a treat. And I paid with my watch. And the lady in the window was like, well, aren't you fancy?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I am, actually.
Yeah, Tap to Pay has been out for years and years and years.
Yeah. Maybe they don't get at that particular... Yeah. Window, well, they don't get a lot of watch people.
Especially at a drive-through, trying to reach your arm into the...
Well, some companies, I mean, heck, we just got Tap to Pay less than a year.
Because you have to get all new terminals.
Yeah, right.
But and software.
Yeah, what
and software
is
to be able to do it.
What is the extended EMV, the extended security to do chips on credit cards? Everyone had to get new terminals then, and most of those terminals had Tap to Pay already built in. But the ones that didn't, the companies aren't going to buy new terminals again. I just had to buy a new terminal.
Mm-hmm. I went to my garage with my old car, and he said it's going to cost you X, which was much lower than I thought. God bless them. But I went to pay, and I looked down, and I saw that they had a terminal with the little code, the little icon.
Wires.
Wireless icon.
Yeah.
So I took out my phone. He said, I don't think that works. I said, yeah, I think it does. He says, no, I don't think it does. I said, yeah, let's try it. Ding. He was so excited. He was so excited to discover he had this capability. The next time I came in, I paid with my watch, and he was even more excited. Now I have a new car, and I don't go that often anymore, thank heaven. The tap to pay, I certainly... do not ever slide my credit card into a gas station pump anymore.
And I always try to cancel the PIN. Run it as credit. I don't want to put my PIN in.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, no.
You used to get a discount if you did debit versus credit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now the banks got rid of that. So any card, debit or credit, you pay the same high fee.
Right.
So we started asking people to pay with Venmo.
Yes.
But now Venmo's getting sneaky. If they think it's a commercial transaction, they'll charge a fee. So in the where field, you put like pizza party or something.
Yeah, right.
Or not where, what?
The what field, yeah. Yeah, my wife takes Venmo at the public market.
Yep. Yeah, we used to do Square.
What is that? Just another form of... Like, yeah, I was going to say...
Yeah. It's Square, yeah. It's essentially the same thing, only Square charges more.
I can
much
remember
more.
It used to be called Cube.
Yes.
Yep. And Intuit has one for in their Go payment. We use that because it ties into QuickBooks.
Right.
PayPal used to have one. That's all the companies that used to have, that still have these mobile payment systems, had to start charging fees because most of them got bought by banks.
Yeah, exactly.
And mm-hmm. Bank, you got to put that banking fee on it. In fact, that's Apple Card is switching from Goldman Sachs to Chase, is it? One of the big things on the Apple Card is they don't charge any fees, just interest. So no late fees, no overdraft fees, just interest. And the banks didn't like that. Somehow Goldman Sachs lost billions of dollars on a credit card.
They didn't lose it. They just didn't make it.
Yeah, they didn't make it is what they projected.
Right. But yeah, if you have a phone that will do tap to pay, which is to say, if you have a phone that isn't a flip phone.
Set it up.
And you're not using it, you should be.
Yeah.
And if you have a smartwatch, it probably has a tap to pay app. It may, again, needs to be set up. But once you put your credit card in, it ends up being a different number from your normal credit card.
Right. So when that store gets breached,
right,
your real credit card number isn't among it.
Right. And that's why Dave said, you know, if you return something and you paid with your phone, you have to tap with your phone again to get the credit. So you need to be aware that those things happen. But I'll tell you what, you know, with all the skimmers and things that you hear about for credit cards, I tap to pay every time.
And they have gotten so small that it used to be easy to tell there was something weird stuck to the front of the card reader. But now they've gotten so small and so easy to stick on for a couple hours and then pull it off again before anyone notices it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
with the 3D printers, you know, they just use a real thin film and
I always tap to pay now, and it I've had my credit card stolen. I don't need to have it stolen again. Thank you very much. Yep. So yeah,
just waiting for someone to make a small enough NFC skimmer.
Well, yeah, those are coming. There's no question to that. And then I don't know what we do. Then we all buy electric cars and
again.
Stuff.
It's just the game of leapfrog.
Yep.
It's no different, you know, with that versus...
Yeah. It's like it's like we're back into social distancing.
Yeah.
So right now the skimmers are about the size of a phone for NFCs. So if someone is too close to you, they could be running the skimmer against your wallet in your back pocket.
Right.
And pulling
money
off. That's
why I've got that card.
Yep. Most credit cards now come in a foil wrapper. Or wallets will have an electronic a Faraday cage built in.
Yeah, so my credit cards are in a...
It's an extra card that I put behind my others, and it just blocks...
The NFC stuff. That's right.
So NFC, near-field communication, was supposed to be like a centimeter, half an inch. Turns out with the right antennas, it can be many feet.
Yes, exactly right. You know, they're using that stuff now... In warehouses, and sometimes you know you stack things 20 feet high, and they're still reading the NFC off the bottom box on the stack. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here. On member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Bill from Greece, New York, on the line. What's up, Bill?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And by the way, you guys have a great conversation during the news. That would make a wonderful podcast.
Thank you, I think.
You guys came right through the phone. I heard a podcast yesterday that Microsoft had bought GitHub, and the podcaster was really upset about it, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, it was several years ago, and we were all very scared, but so far it seems that Microsoft is being a pretty good steward.
But I thought this guy was saying that they're using the software and the GitHub to train their AI.
Oh, that's probably likely, yeah, yeah. Look, the reality is that AI is data hungry. Everybody's AI is data hungry, and... I don't think Microsoft is the only company using GitHub to train their code-making AI segments. Anybody can download anything from GitHub, and it's real easy to write an agent that goes through GitHub and downloads everything. So it is unlikely that that Microsoft is the only one doing that. There are also a lot of people left GitHub when Microsoft bought it, and I don't remember. GitLab was the one, and Bitbucket. And I'm sure that those are also being scraped for all of their code. GitLab, Bitbucket, Codeberg, Launchpad, SourceForge, all of those are being scraped all the time for all their code. So, yeah, Microsoft is doing it, but they're not the only ones, and it's silly to think they are.
And I just heard another podcast where so much cruft is getting introduced into open source projects because AI is learning, and people are using AI to make code who don't understand the code. And there was the one example they were giving was testing if a function exists before trying to call it, so we don't want the error to happen. Well, it's inside of Java. You're testing if Java exists. Yes, Java exists. You're already inside it.
Yeah.
You don't need that test and all of the extra code around that test.
Right. If the test runs, you're in Java.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes.
But yeah, they're thinking that's because the AI has been learning on this code and other people are putting tests in, which is good, but you get so many tests, the code gets big and bloated and runs slower.
Right.
Which is sort of modern programming these days. The people who optimize their code are long gone.
Right. So, yeah, Bill, it is very likely that Microsoft is, in fact, scraping GitHub for Copilot, but so is everybody else.
Okay, so it's not that big a deal.
It's not as big a deal. Obviously, if you are someone who writes code, So here's the problem. GitHub, generally speaking, GitHub, GitLab, all of those are for open source code. So you put it out there for free. You put it out there for people to download and use. You can't complain when AI downloads it too. You may be unhappy about that, but that's part of what you agreed to.
It wasn't what we expected. We didn't know AI was going to be doing that.
Right.
When AI was just chatbots, that's fine. But now it's actually doing more.
Right. But yeah, the reality is everybody does it, and it's going to continue to happen, and there's nothing we can do about that.
Okay, I want to thank you for that. And by the way, I'm a big distro hopper, and I always have trouble with virtual machines, and I've tried VM and VirtualBox and boxes, and I found a new one. It's called Virtual Machine Manager, and what's nice about that, where all these virtual machines come in with text that's too tiny to see, in Virtual Machine Manager, it scales it right up for you with one click.
Nice, very nice. I'll look into it. Thanks.
Is that the Vert-Manager?
Huh?
Is that Vert-Manager?
Well, that could be another way of saying it, yeah, or Vert Manager.
I'm just trying to find the right link.
On some distros, it's really hard to set up. On other distros, it's set up for you.
Yep.
It's QEMU/KVM.
Oh, sure. QEMU, QEMU, yeah, whatever, yeah. Yeah, 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 that's been around for a while. It's pretty good.
Oh, it's excellent. I just went through 7 distros yesterday.
Yeah, there's also Vert Machine, as Steve said, and there's OpenStack, Hypervisor, a bunch of them. And QEMU, QMU, whatever it's called, is a good one.
Yeah. Have a good afternoon, and thanks for everything you've done.
All right, thank you. Have fun. So if you are interested, a virtual machine lets you run essentially a computer inside your computer. So let's say you're running Windows and you want to play with Linux, but you don't have an extra computer. If you've got enough RAM and enough hard disk space, you can say, for example, all right, set up a virtual machine, a fake machine inside my computer, Let's say you've got 16 gig of RAM or 8 gig of RAM. I want to give 2 gig or 4 gig or 3 gig to this machine, and so I can put Linux in it and see how it runs. Yeah, it's going to be a little slow. Obviously, I made it cramped, but I can at least play with it and see what it's like. And lots of people do that, and that's what virtual machines are for, really.
And it's, you know, people running Linux that need that one Windows program could run Windows in a VM on Linux.
I am running Windows in a VM on Linux.
We do the same thing on the Mac. I had to install QuickBooks on a new Mac the other day, they didn't want to go to QuickBooks subscription. That's where we're seeing it a lot, mostly.
Yeah.
People that have the one-time payment, I don't want to go to the monthly subscription service. Can you install my old version? I'll need a VM running an old OS, but yeah, we can do that.
Right. You can do that. All right. I'm going to read the miscellaneous news. According to the latest ruling from the Munich Regional Court, Asus and Acer are banned from directly selling their PCs in Germany, Europe's largest economy. The core reasoning behind this decision is patent claims asserted by Nokia, including patents related to core HEVC H.265 encoding and decoding techniques. As both Asus and Acer use GPUs, processors, and many other digital decoding and encoding engines for video, the use has to be licensed, and the sale can only proceed with approval from Nokia. Unfortunately, this doesn't mean cheaper stuff for the rest of us, particularly since RAM storage and particularly graphics card prices are skyrocketing. As just one example, the RTX 5080 is about 43% more expensive than it was just 3 weeks ago. 43% more expensive than it was just 3 weeks ago, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight.
And related to that, Western Digital announced that they have sold out of their entire 2026 production.
And half of their 2027 production.
Yep. And it's barely February, the end of February.
Yeah. Long-term storage, speaking of which, good segue.
Yep.
Long-term data storage has always been expensive, particularly since both magnetic drives and SSDs need to be replaced regularly. The Microsoft Research Project Silica team has announced they've successfully used a laser to etch data onto borosilicate glass, which they say will last 10,000 years. This is just in the lab for right now, but expect them to fast-track it, since humanity is generating data at an exponential rate, doubling approximately every 3 years, but don't expect glass storage media in your home anytime soon. Ireland's Data Protection Commission, the country's data protection authority, has opened a formal investigation into X over the use of the platform's Grok artificial intelligence tool to generate non-consensual sexual images of real people, including children. The Irish investigation joins a growing multinational enforcement effort currently targeting X's Grok AI operations, including the UK, the European Commission, France, and California. These could result in big fines. Not that X can afford it at this time, of course. As major companies around the world start incorporating AI into virtually all aspects of their operation, things are bound to get a little wonky from time to time, as Amazon can attest. In December, Amazon's cloud infrastructure, which makes up the backbone of a large part of the internet, experienced two outages. One lasted 13 hours. Apparently, these were caused by engineers allowing the agentic Kiro AI system to perform some tasks, which led the AI to delete and recreate the entire environment. Amazon is denying the report, saying that it was a brief event caused by user error. Sure, the user error was letting AI do it in the first place. OpenAI is about to crash the smart speaker party, and it's bringing some serious AI firepower. The company's first consumer hardware device will be a camera-equipped speaker. Yeah, that's not creepy. Priced between $200 and $300. But this isn't just another Alexa clone. The device can recognize items on your table and listen to conversations happening around it, processing everything through ChatGPT's advanced language models. The standout feature? A Face ID-type facial recognition system that lets people make purchases just by looking at the device. There's absolutely nothing creepy about that, and what could possibly go wrong? What can't go wrong is you giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for the help desk calls. My smart speaker bought this without my
approval.
What can I do?
A couple of years ago when Amazon A speaker came out,
right?
There was a big story about a kid that said, near Christmas time, A, get me a dollhouse. And a dollhouse showed up. So the family went to the news.
And it was a multi-hundred-dollar dollhouse. Yeah. It was not $50 dollhouse. It was $1,000 dollhouse.
How did it pick? And the family had one-click ordering turned on and didn't have password. Passwords were saved, so it would and default credit cards and whatnot, so it just showed up. So they went to the news. The news reported about it. And on air, the newscaster said, "Hey, buy me a dollhouse." And hundreds of other people in the city started getting dollhouses.
Yeah. Well, we see that to this day. What I have learned is that one of them, and I think it's Google, when they do an ad with Google, there is a either ultra or infrasound, sound that the human can't hear, that is broadcast as part of the command that tells the speaker to not pay attention.
Commercials used to be able to do that, and I think it was the Burger King Wikipedia fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
So there was some ad that said, "Tell me about the Whopper from Burger King sandwich." And so it was a weird, why did they say it so weird? So then people's smart devices would look up the Wikipedia entry.
Right.
It didn't take very long before someone changed the Wikipedia entry.
Yes.
So they stopped that ad, and companies then put some infrared or ultrasound so that it doesn't do it anymore.
But yeah, those are.
Remind me to watch this show on this network.
Right, and you can do that. You can say to your smart device, "Remind me to watch such and so at 8 p.m. And it will do so. And that's a nice little thing.
But you don't want the TV commercial doing that.
Right.
Especially since if you already watch that show.
Right.
You don't need reminded.
Right, you don't need reminding again. And nowadays, everybody records stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So, I never watch anything live. I can't tell you the last time I watched something live.
On the occasion that I'm at and I push fast forward and it doesn't work, I'm live.
Right. Actually, I can tell you the last time I watched something live. About a couple of weeks ago, I discovered there's an entire channel on Plex for Forged in Fire. So I put it on in the background.
Yeah.
And I watched it for a couple of hours. And at one point, I was actually watching it, and I grabbed the remote.
Mm-hmm.
That reminded me. I grabbed the remote, and I couldn't go anywhere with it because it was live.
Yeah.
Well, who does that anymore?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Apple even has a feature in Apple TV called What Did He Say?
Oh, that's nice. Go back 5 seconds?
I think it's 10.
Oh, nice.
And turn on closed captioning. Temporarily.
Oh, I watch everything with closed captioning now. I have hearing aids, and trust me, I watch it. I have trouble at movies now. I wait for things to come on on one of the few services I'm actually connected to.
My wife and I were watching something, and one of the characters was speaking French, and it wasn't being subtitled, but the closed captions were writing it in French. And she said, turn the captions on. They are. They're just in French.
I watch everything with closed captions now. Mostly, I don't. When I watch something, when I watch an old movie, I mostly don't need it. Old movies, people spoke more clearly, and the background music or noise was lower than the human voices. None of that is true anymore. Most people are mush-mouthed, just like me right now. Most people are mush-mouthed, and the background music and the noises and explosions and stuff are much louder than the human voices, and it annoys me. I'm old. Get off my lawn. I admit it. I liked it better when you could hear the people speaking.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that so much anymore.
Some of the surround sound systems have an option to either amplify the speech or de-amplify the background, and that helps sometimes.
A hearing aid has a TV setting, which in fact lowers the non human frequencies.
Yeah.
So that helps. But even so.
Don't hear those dog whistles anymore?
No. Thank you very much. No matter how you mean dog whistles.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller, Matt from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Matt. What's up?
When you said dog whistle, I remember back in the day I had a squirrel collar.
Very nice.
But anyway, I just, as we're going out of here, I just wanted to chime in, and I got a couple good websites for the weekend here. Everybody tries to get these good air price fares, and you see these commercials and stuff. Whether you believe it or not, Google has a good the good website, google.com. You know, /flights.
Yep.
Okay.
And yeah, Google has gotten
realized that you can. Yeah, they got the best prices. They show you on the whole calendar, so you see these Trivago commercials, these hotel, and you know what I mean. But Google, they seem to have it got it down to a science. You know.
Yeah, they do. One of the things that Google has done is. They're slowly trying to take over everybody's business, and one of the ways they're doing it is with flight and hotel information. Yeah.
Yep, and another one for good watching television, TVPass.org. Don't ever pay for cable no more, but you didn't hear it from me.
All right, thanks.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Weekend. Yeah, you can now have Google set your entire itinerary for you. You know, say I want to go to, you can it's, of course it's AI, it's Gemini, but you can say, all right, I want to go to this city on these dates. I have young children. Plan an itinerary that gets us there by plane. And plan 3-day trips, whatever you want to do. And it will do that for you. It's quite amazing nowadays the way those things all work. I'm pretty impressed by the way that they've managed to do that. Now, are they perfect? No. And you should not only, you shouldn't never take anything from AI as gospel. But certainly for something like that, it can at least give you good ideas of what to do when you get to a strange city.
A direction.
Yeah. You know, give you a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to New York City on these dates. I want to see 3 Broadway shows. What still has good seats available? That sort of thing, right? So, yeah. Yes, it will cost you hundreds of dollars to get a ticket, but that's a separate issue right there. But yeah, so there's just a lot of that stuff that's out there. And AI can certainly help with a lot of those things. Again, I don't personally rely too much on that stuff. I'm not actually to the point where I feel comfortable letting AI buy my tickets, but certainly to give me the suggestions on what to do and where to go and what to see and how to get there and things like that. Yes, I can certainly see that. The problem with all of that, of course, is that we used to pay travel agents to do that. So we've taken yet another job away from a human being.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot. You know, AI is taking jobs from humans. And while that's wonderful for the corporation, because it's cheaper for them. They don't have to pay a salary. They don't have to pay benefits. They don't have to pay anything other than, you know, keep the AI running. It's bad for us because, A, we lose jobs, and, B, it's really horrid, horrid, horrid for the environment. We're discovering just how much global warming and wasted water is being used to keep AI data centers running.
They're building a new data center in Phoenix in the middle of the desert?
When
that area is already out of water?
Well, that what they're doing there is they're planning, at least, who knows what's going to happen, they're planning on using a lot of solar energy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually
So that's one place that would have a lot of solar.
And they have a lot of solar energy, so that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to, you're not going to build a big solar energy plant in Western New York. It just ain't happening. People do it, but it's just not, it's not as efficient as doing it in Phoenix. So that makes sense. And that's why they're talking about putting a lot of that stuff in outer space or above the Arctic Circle.
According to datacenters.com, there are 88 data centers in Phoenix already. Yeah.
And many of them use
in one city.
Many of them use solar energy because it's super cheap there. And you know, they have giant batteries, including they're using salt batteries now. They actually use salt to house the electricity. I don't know how that works, but I don't need to know how that works. I just know it does work. So good for them. And so there's a lot of that goes on, and we're going to see more and more of it. You know, they've like we've said, they've already bought up all the RAM and all the hard drive production of this year and half of next year to fund data centers to stock data centers that aren't even built yet. So you know, we're not going to see, you know, your new phone is going to cost more and have less in it. Your new laptop is going to cost more and have less in it. And it's all because of AI. So get used to that. It's going to happen. That's a problem for another day because we're done. We're done for the week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who listened. I want to thank everybody who voted in the poll. It's not too late. The poll will be up for the whole week. So give us a vote in the poll and we very much appreciate it. So we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that we continue with your generous support to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. So be good to one another, will you?